Football is back, and so is the Ringer NFL show. Coming at you 5 days a week with wall-to-wall coverage from recapping the Sunday games, giving a player perspective, deep dives, and previewing the coming slate. Check out the Ringer NFL show on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast, The Ringer FC. I'm Musa Kwonga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am all right, thanks man. How are you?
I'm very good. I am communing with the conference of the UEFA Champions League. I feel spiritually connected to the Champions League.
Oh man, what a week. We were saying before how I think that maybe the Champions League has started to hit maybe a bit of a peak in terms of lulls just as they're about to change it.
It felt to me like I really started enjoying my degree just before leaving uni, and I'm like, oh, I could have done with more of that. Then it's like, change.
I wish I'd concentrated a little bit more in years one and two.
Trust me, the law degree, I tried to concentrate, but it was tough going. But yeah,
red cards, wonder goals, people headbutting beers thrown from the crowd.
Oh God, just the first 5 minutes. Yeah.
I know. We'll get onto the Champions League in a bit. We're going to whiz through a load of stuff because we've got to get this recorded and over to the good people at the Ringer before they sign off for Thanksgiving. So we're not going to go into too much depth for each game, but there was a lot decided on this match day. Before we get going, quick bit of admin. First of all, we hope everyone's staying safe and well, getting vaccinated if you can.
Getting boosted if you can.
Oh my God, give me the booster. Give me it. Second of all, Stadio newsletter went out on Wednesday. Thanks to everyone who signed up. If you want to get a weekly newsletter from us, go to stadio.football, scroll to the bottom, pop your email address in, sign up. We don't do anything apart from send you email, doesn't go anywhere, no data passed on, et cetera, et cetera. You get a confirmation email when you sign up, so just make sure you check your junk mail. And also check your junk mail every Wednesday because even though I write the thing, it goes into my junk mail.
Oh God, bleak.
Wright's house went up on Wednesday with Mr. Arsene Wenger. What a treat. Thanks to everyone who's got in touch about it so far. Feedback's been lovely. It was a really, really enjoyable chat. I wish we had longer with him, but he was on the clock.
He was indeed, yeah.
Of course, Ringer FC is available on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. So if you do listen on an app that allows you to rate and review, please do so. It'd be very kind. There's a week left on Stadio number 80 sweatshirts. Go to weareprintsocial.com/stadio. You get the tote bags there as well. All of the proceeds are being donated to the Trussell Trust, supporting UK food banks. All the support is massively appreciated. Thanks to everyone who's bought them already. Printed and shipped when the campaign ends. There's a little timer underneath the order for, well, the page thingy, the description, which shows you how long you've got left. Any other admin? Is there any other admin?
That piece I wrote about
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, we might have mentioned that already, but yeah, it's up on ringer.com/soccer. That is
a
up.
Mighty ringer. Stadio Actuals Players on Spotify. That's the last thing. So today, Champions League.
Yep. Let's get into it.
Actually, before we do get into the Champions League, literally just before we started recording, Tracy Crouch, the former UK sports minister, has called on the government to create a new independent regulator for English football, which will give fans more say in the running of Premier League clubs. The Premier League's welcomed it. It's literally been published just before we went on air, so we're going to save it. Because I'd quite like to read some of it, but it's 162 pages.
So yeah, even for my skim reading, that's, yeah.
We'll read up a little bit about it and we'll do it on Monday maybe, or do some on Monday when we know more.
Yeah.
But give that a shout out at the top of the show. Let's begin in Manchester, because Manchester City are yet again top of their Champions League group, and they will go through top of their Champions League group, coming from behind to beat PSG 2-1. At the Etihad. what a curious game of football, because it looked as though PSG, that front three, didn't really fancy doing a huge amount on Wednesday night.
Strange team. Strange team.
Just like clockwork, Mbappe pops up with a goal to put them 1-0 up.
It's the way they combine. It's a funny one. Like, the thing with PSG is, the question is, can they absorb sufficient shock to then hit you when their strikers feel inspired? They're a bit like a 500-page epic novel where there's like only about three paragraphs of action. But when the action comes, you know what I mean? You know? I was going to call out a novel, but I was like, no, I can't. I can't be calling out authors. I can't. Even
authors
if they're long.
Sending from the other authors. Oh, actually, speaking of authors, congratulations.
On what?
Blue Dot Book of the Year.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's really nice, isn't it?
Congratulations, Musa. Musa, if you didn't know, Musa got awarded Book of the Year by Blue Dot Festival.
That was, you know, can I say?
I know what everyone's saying. Which bloody book?
So Blue Dot Festival, very kindly named, in the end, it's all about love, their favorite book of 2021, which means a lot because they are like a really forward-thinking festival. And like, I'm really flattered by that. And they've got Bjork headlining in July.
Oh my God.
I really like Vespertine. I really like, I love Bjork.
I think you should do readings from the book with Bjork doing the music.
Honestly, don't even get me started on imagining that.
Speaking of wild collabs. Yeah. Did you see the Atleti and other things post?
Oh my God, the Shea Serrano thing you noticed. That's amazing.
They basically just ripped off one of Shea's book covers randomly Wednesday morning. So weird. Anyway, yes, where were we? Man City.
Yeah, Man City. It's interesting. So very much PSG just feel like a team of shock absorbers in terms of that, like hard running midfield. Absorb the shock, the back seven, and then the front three will get you something. But the thing about this was it was a vindication for Man City just playing their game. We saw them do this actually a couple of times, I think. We've seen them do it a few times actually the last couple of seasons where they go a goal down and just keep playing their football.
Mm.
And they seem to be on a mission to be like, we're going to win this Champions League without a striker. Well, I mean, technically, Gabriel Jesus is a striker, but his consistent finishing has deserted him in recent months, I think it's fair to say, but he's back. He's looking good again. And City just circulated the ball extremely well. And whatever happens in the later stages of the tournament, I fully expect them to be involved as a front runner.
Do you think they'll both heavily rest for the final round of fixtures, seeing as they're both set on their positions?
You never, ever know with... You know, because the thing with PSG, there's commercial considerations, aren't there? So I wonder if there's like some kind of incentive to play at least one of the stars. I don't know. You never know with PSG.
True.
The thing with them is, I have to say, I don't think a NASA scientist could calculate exactly how good they are. They're the strangest team. They're like, PSG could win everything in sight and I'd still never know how good they were. They are an absolute mystery. And I think that PSG were created just to tell us that, like, sometimes in life, I was talking to an ex about this. She said, Musa, the thing is sometimes when you're working on stuff, you're a writer, like, you'll just be an enigma to some people. And I think PSG are like football's enigma. I just have no idea how good they are.
I agree. Speaking of another enigma, go to the other game in this group. RB Leipzig beating Club Brugge 5-0 away from home. Check this stat out from Opt France. It's the first time that RB Leipzig have won a match in European competitions by a margin of 5 goals. They've never had a greater victory away from home in professional football in all competitions.
They are a truly strange team, Leipzig. I don't know what is are they on a journey, are they going through something? I don't know. You know, I think there's a lot of this going about where I almost watched Leipzig. Actually, do you know what Leipzig remind me of? So there was a pub, right, in central London, and they served Guinness there, and I used to go and have Guinness there. I love Guinness, but I used to go to this pub, Ryan, because I never knew from week to week what the Guinness was going to be like. Sometimes the head was tiny, sometimes it's massive. It was a curiosity because I'm like, you know, you get Guinness for consistency, but I was like, I'm just amazed by how consistently wrong they could get it. And they always got it wrong in a different way every single week, or got it right sometimes. Every now and again, it was spectacular. This Leipzig team, when they're on, they're just fluid, they're beautiful, it's spectacular. When they're wrong, it's just like, what? Like, what is...
Yeah.
And I mean, to their credit, because it's, we like to be affirming on this podcast, the fluidity of some of the play in the first half was superb. I mean, Brugge were not really at the races, but still they were punished. Leipzig beat them as an elite team should beat them. Mm. You know, they have been a team that's been difficult to put away at home, Brugge, actually. They've not been the easiest.
Yeah, they gave PSG a run for the money.
They really did. And I think the thing with them is, with Brugge, I will say, is they lost Emmanuel Dennis last year, who was a big threat on the counter, who was a real goal threat, who I think he fell out with the squad. So, you know, he wasn't necessarily missed off the field, but on the field, certainly missed. And once Nkunku got that lead, and he's been superb this year, there was just no way back. Yeah, I mean, four at the half. And they kind of eased off as well.
Yeah, that was the great headbutting a beer happened, I think, for the celebration of the fourth or fifth goal. Fifth goal, I think it was.
Yeah.
Unbelievable scenes. It was a good one. Akinbayaloza looked very, very pleased with himself on the touchline. And so he should, because he took charge of the side because of Jesse Marsh's positive COVID test. That's a really, really important win for them, because that puts them in a much better position now for the Europa League.
Mm.
When that group got drawn, coming behind the financial muscle of PSG and Manchester City and going into the Europa League, it's not a dreadful outcome.
No, it's not a bad outcome. It's really not.
The disappointing thing from Leipzig is that I think they definitely could have picked up a couple of other points on the way.
Mm.
Because PSG have been very, very strange. They've only scored 9, conceded 7. Leipzig have been scoring heavily but conceding heavily.
PSG are a strange one just on that, but actually they're both teams, PSG and Leipzig, that on any given day could torch you with 3 goals in half an hour, or who could receive an absolute hiding. And it would be no surprise in either case. It'd be no surprise, for example, if PSG got done 4-0, like in the next couple of rounds. It would be no surprise at all if at some point either of those teams got absolutely just. But it would also be no surprise if either of those teams put on a spellbinding performance.
Did we shout out the Man City goals before we move on from this group?
I don't think we did, and we probably should.
We definitely should do, because
where they were constructed.
They're exactly the same. They kind of like clipped to the back post. We saw them do this in the pandemic Champions League kind of era as well, where... was it the pandemic one, or was it last season? I'm sorry, that those two just
against
merged
Dortmund?
Into one.
Was it Dortmund?
It was against Gladbach.
Right.
They also did it against Dortmund, I think, but I think mainly against Gladbach, where they just worked and worked and worked, and then they'd like ping to the back post.
And you almost concede out of exhaustion because you're just dragged out of position.
Mm.
And the thing about City, it's the Tom and Jerry thing, where you know exactly what is going to happen. You know exactly what Jerry's going to do, but you can't stop it. Mm-hmm. And I think... the way that they work the ball, actually, shout out to PSG, because their goal was, there were some really beautiful team goals, to be honest, in these couple of match days. But the PSG goal is pretty nicely worked, actually. The way that they really like work the ball around, their chemistry was impressive. But for this one, I mean, the thing about City is, it's not just the way they combine for these goals, right? It's the way that multiple City players can do that. Like, The personal will change, but the attacking motion is the same.
Mm.
The positioning, the fluidity is really something. Gundogan looking good again. It's no coincidence that City in the ascendant when he stars, and he will have a big role to play for them again this year. I just hope that his fitness holds up because he's been so unlucky with that in recent months. And I hope, crucially, that when Pep gets a formula that works, and this formula looks like it's working, I hope he sticks to it.
Yeah, me too.
So please just, you know, back yourself, Pep.
I wrote a tweet saying that even when Man City kind of score a scruffy looking goal, it still looks like a trademark Man City goal.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely.
Because it was kind of scuffed in the middle, and Raheem Sterling kind of like slid and it, you know, squirmed in off the post, but it was still that same move, you know. And
nice to see him score. Nice to see him getting a poacher's finish as well. Very nice.
And Bernardo's touch on the second one was...
Well, he's been in a state of grace, actually. Him and Mo Salah and a couple other players in the Premier League have been in a state of grace since starting. They've just been on another one.
Let's talk about Mo Salah quick and go to Group B. You got a lovely goal for Liverpool.
Can I say this about this goal? The left flank of the Porto defence looked permanently confused. every single part of that movement, from the moment he gets possession on the right flank, everyone looks confused. Nobody truly wants to be there. Which is always the sign of a great goal. I think him and Henderson combining.
Mm. You like, do that Salah, thing straight away where you turn around and just point into Henderson.
Yeah, because he was like, we did three things in the move on the way to this goal that absolutely, like, unbelievable. It was a spectacular goal that.
But it wasn't the goal of the night, was it?
Not even close. Because that's the thing, it wasn't even close.
Thiago's goal in this game was absolutely unbelievable.
It's outrageous. It was outrageous.
Did it touch the turf ever so slightly and bounce up?
I think it had to have done. I think it did. I think it did, didn't it?
Because there was one, I couldn't tell on the first angle. And I saw the second angle and he kind of like does that amazing, amazing controlled cut down on it. It's almost like a punch shot in golf.
It's unreal. It is.
Oh, the trajectory is just so aesthetically pleasing.
It looked like, was it Augusta where they skim the ball off the pond, where the golfers skim the ball across the pond? Is it Augusta? Which?
That's two golf references.
Any golf fans who are listening, there is one particular shot they do. Is it Rory McIlroy that did it? When they skim it off the pond. It's unreal.
Wow, that's brave.
And it was just like that. It was spectacular. Like, and it was like a demonstration, you know, because Thiago's had, do you know what it is? It's one of those ones where he's been signed. And in the same way that it's slightly different because there's injury issues, but when Pogba was signed by United, Pogba was meant to elevate Manchester United to something absolutely extraordinary. And Thiago signed for Liverpool was meant to just bring the Liverpool 2.0, the full evolution of that midfield. It hasn't quite happened. And this goal was like a demonstration that there are just things he does that no one else can do in that midfield.
So good, that goal. Or almost
any other midfield, frankly. Yeah.
Yeah, true. Liverpool obviously already through, but that maintained their 100% record in the group.
Porto had a taste early. They could have done something more, but...
They did, but they are still in an okay position because, in the words of Arsene Wenger, you need to suffer.
The suffering is necessary. The anxiety is this. Atleti...
They were really poor. They were really poor. I thought Milan were good, but Atleti were very poor.
Do you know what worries me about this? I could see this coming.
Do you know what's really interesting about this group? So Liverpool are obviously top, scored 15, conceded 5. Mm. Porto second, scored 3. Atleti third, scored 4. Milan bottom, scored 5.
So confusing.
Very, very odd. Milan's first win in the group. They got it late. Was it 87 minutes, the winner?
Junior, yeah.
Assisted by Frank Kessié.
There's another player who is having a really strong sort of few months. Mm-hmm. Well, he's been on one for a while, but yeah, great to see him do that.
Suarez, Depor and Antoine Griezmann all got hooked when the game was still 0-0 with Atleti chasing goals. That's weird because I thought Simeone kind of started to look like he was figuring it out and then he hasn't. It looks like he's kind of lost it again. I don't know what is wrong with him in these Champions League games. They've looked probably more scared than I've seen Atleti look for many a Champions League campaign, actually.
It feels like they're caught between two stools, almost. Like, it's so strange because they'd really cracked the Champions League and the pandemic came and they just seem to have, like, slid back. Like, the snakes and ladders of the pandemic really hit them harder than anyone because they were, like, they just seemed to have cracked it.
And now against back. Anfield, yeah. against Liverpool, yeah, yeah. Anfield that night. Yeah, and then they went to Portugal for the knockouts and then just didn't look the same side at all.
All momentum was gone, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I think that really, I mean, obviously, purely in a footballing sense, let's say, because obviously we know that took its toll on everyone. But in a footballing sense, I think that kind of hurt Atleti the most in that year's Champions League.
Yeah, them and Atalanta were really on the way to do something. Yeah. They were really
Atalanta
on the run.
Atalanta kind of did okay when it picked up again, though.
They weren't, if the energy wasn't there, the vibe was not there, like The thing is, when a team has come like that, like Atleti and Atalanta did that year, you need time to regroup. And I think they had a good time to get a look at them and work out what was going on. But yeah, anyway, that's it.
The final round of games in that group, it is Porto against Atleti in Porto. Milan host Liverpool. Who do you think gets out of that group?
I have absolutely no idea.
I don't either. I genuinely don't.
Honestly, with the results have gone on tonight in this group and other groups, I couldn't tell you a thing about anything.
Do you know what? It really wouldn't surprise me if Liverpool rested a load of players, Porto and Atleti drew 1-1, and then Milan won and got out of the group.
Yeah, I can see that. Can totally see that. Because Milan have got the kind of, they've got the bounce, haven't they?
And then Porto go through to the Europa League and Atleti are out completely, which, I mean, that's going to be really, really, it's going to be a big blow for them financially. Football-wise.
This is very poor. They're the champions, Ryan. This is very, yeah. very poor for them. It's really disappointing for Atleti. They've got Griezmann back. Rodrigo De Paul has come in and been really impressive in La Liga in particular. It's just really, really disappointing they didn't kick on from here, I have to say. Yeah, anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I would have expected them to get out of that group easy, actually.
Yeah.
Group C, Ajax winning again after going a goal down to a penalty early on, well, after 20-odd minutes. Two goals from Sebastian Haller.
He's having a lovely time there, isn't he?
I think he scored more away goals this Champions League campaign than Luis Suarez has in his entire career, apparently, which is frankly an absolutely wild stat.
That's incredible. Suarez scored some really important Champions League goals. That's the weird thing. That's absolutely wild.
Apparently, he's played 5 games in the Champions League and has a third of Suarez's total Champions League goal tally. He scored more goals in his first 5 Champions League games than any other player in the history of the competition. I can't get over how that's that. That's broken me. That's absolutely broken me.
Yeah, that's incredible. That's incredible.
Ajax were comfortable at the top of that group, but they've confirmed that they will go through top because Dortmund lost away at Sporting and it was not a good night for Dortmund whatsoever.
They referred to that Dortmund team as in a deep sleep, didn't they, on DAZN?
Mm-hmm.
This Dortmund team was in a deep sleep. I mean, it just looked, the first goal, the concession of the first goal, a mix-up between Schultz and Pongracic, this was an absolute disaster, completely normal, like long ball, cleared over the top by Sporting. And the problem with this defence and the second goal as well, like just losing Sporting player top of the box. I think Akanji maybe lost the player top of the box. There's just no pressure on the ball in the six area, no coordination between the centre-backs and the defensive midfield. It was just, that gap looked like the Bermuda Triangle, honestly. And then it's the lack of coordination. It's funny because when Haaland's not there, not it's all about that, but it's like it knits things together. And there was a point where you saw Jude Bellingham and I thought to myself, this is one of the first games I thought to myself, it's amazing that a player like Jude Bellingham has so much responsibility in the Dortmund team. But then I was also like, my goodness, like at times like this, he was one of the few people where you were like, the leadership is so pronounced there. Like he did provide a lot of the leadership. And I was just thinking like, it felt like, I hesitate to talk about psychology of teams and individual players, but it was like no one ever really stepped up. And Sporting, you know, they weren't necessarily always in the front, but they just made the most of their chances. It just felt like every single time they attacked, the defense was porous. And that's very, very, what's the word? That's demoralizing for a team like Dortmund, right? Like it had shades almost of the kind of the Dortmund Leverkusen game where they had to work really, really, really hard because they knew that whenever they scored, they weren't going to have the solidity. And that. We said this, and I don't like to sort of hammer on Dortmund because, you know, I love them as a club and I love watching them as a team. But
they should be getting out of this group though.
They should, exactly. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, exactly. I don't want to be harsh, but.
Yeah, they should have been getting out of this group and they are out of the Champions League. They're into the Europa League.
Bad look for them.
It is a bad look and it's a tricky one for Marco Rosa. I think he has had, I think it's the injuries that's killed them though for this because they have so many injuries that. You are then relying on an 18-year-old Jude Bellingham who shouldn't be, already in one of the leaders in that team at such a young age. I think one of the positives about Dortmund, I think, is that Julian Brandt's form has been pretty good.
Yeah, yeah.
And him coming back into the side, I think, is because of the injuries, it's given him a really good run in the team. So when everyone does come back fit, that is a really good option for Marco Rosa because...
And I quite like him in that role as well. I think...
Yeah, me too.
Unfortunately, as a deep-lying player in a two, it only works if you're possession heavy, but this is quite nice because he combines really well with, you know, he plays wide, but he also combines quite well with the primary striker and he can sort of cut into the central space quite well. And Daniel Marlon is plays as a nine, but actually vacates the nine spot quite a lot in the best way, because, you know, he moves well, is very dynamic. Got another goal tonight, which is good to see him scoring more regularly as well, because he struggled, I think, for goals so far this year. But yeah, some positive signs for Dortmund, although slightly gutting they're out at such an early stage.
One thing about this game, Emre Can's red. So someone tweeted at the official DAZN Twitter account in Germany saying, does anyone know why Emre Can was sent off? And they reposted, say, they quote tweeted and just said, honestly, no. They could not believe it. It was such a weird red card, man. They've been really on that. Actually, that has really hurt Dortmund in the last two games. Two absolutely bizarre red cards, neither of which should have been red, I don't think.
Do you think that it's going to be a bit, given that sort of bad luck on the Reds and the injuries and the fact that it's Rose's first season, I think there'll be a lot of patience with him, you know?
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, he got booked as well, Rosa. He looked like he was about to lamp someone. I mean, why would you want to piss him off? I just don't get it. But anyway, kind of means that Group C is a bit dead rubbery. Well, fully dead rubbery on the final match day. Quickly in Group D, Real Madrid beating Sheriff 3-0, Inter beating Shakhtar.
Is there any player that enjoys shooting with his instep more than Toni Kroos?
Oh, this was a barring out.
But there's no one that enjoys it more, is there? This man really enjoys shooting with the instep.
I mean, he loves it.
That's like his thing.
Real Madrid and Inter are both through. Sheriff have secured Europa League football, which is massive for them.
Yeah.
Shakhtar will be out of Europe entirely. Let's take a break.
Let's do it.
And then let's do Tuesday's games. Okay, let's go to Tuesday night. Let's start with Chelsea Juve, because Chelsea were absolutely brilliant. There was a great piece of commentary on DAZN in Germany saying Chelsea ist eine Maschine. So basically,
yes,
Chelsea is a machine. Chelsea are a machine. And this, talk about revenge.
Yeah.
This was revenge and then some. Obviously, Juve inflicting Chelsea's only defeat of the campaign so far on the return fixture. Boy, did Chelsea make them pay for it.
They're just bewildering. The front three of like Hudson-Odoi, Ziyech and Pulisic. That is...
First time Chelsea have had three English goal scorers in Champions League game, I believe.
I mean, they were... Chelsea are frightened when they do stuff like this, because...
Yeah, they really are.
Because it's just the depth. It's the depth and it's the knowledge that the combinations work so well. And Hudson-Odoi, we've seen him... We've always known that Tuchel really believes in his talent. We've always known that. But he's had, I would say, a stop-start experience under Tuchel, where he was trusted a lot and then he wasn't. And now he's returned again and he's not going anywhere else anytime fast. He is going to be someone on whom, and I referred to him before as an advanced piece of technology, and I think as a footballer, he's someone that can elevate any attack to the very highest level. The fluidity of Chelsea, even when Chelsea aren't fully fluid, they're devastating. Like, even when they're kind of in like third gear, and you know, this is the thing with this game, this performance, it really, you know, we said there's some matches where show teams exactly where they're at. So no disrespect to obviously Arsenal, but you know, the Liverpool Arsenal, for example, or even, you know, to me, like not notice, or, you know, or United Liverpool, you know, let's be fair, the 5-0. But certainly this is exactly who Juventus are. This is exactly who Chelsea are. Like, it really, really, if we're going to be real, it really is. Like, Juve struggled against, they lost to Palermo. They've scraped wins in Serie A, and they've been heading for or hiding for a while now.
I mean, this is quite a kind group, isn't it? And they were on maximum points before this game. So.
But in terms of the play, in terms of their ball movement and the gaps that are visible in Juventus, like, all it would take was one elite team to come along with just the right amount of disrespect, and this was going to happen. And here we are. Like, this is not a wildly surprising result given the problems that Chelsea have had to solve, because Chelsea went through a bit of a period where they were allowing teams to really come at them. We saw Zenit do it, we saw Villa do it, we saw Juve do it. And Tuchel went away, and to his credit, he worked on this He worked out new patterns. And unfortunately, he's developed a vaccine. Mid-season, gave his team a booster.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I mean, when they look like this, it wouldn't be a surprise to see them and City go to the final again, for example. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Chelsea and Juve are already out of the group. The final match day is important because it will decide who goes through top of that group.
Mm.
Do you want to talk about Manchester United?
Yes, yes, we'll get into that.
Jadon Sancho, angry goal. He is off the mark.
He is off the mark. Was it angry? Was it angry or did he hit it hard? It must be a bit angry. So headline here is Villarreal 0, Manchester United 2.
Ooh, same as it ever was.
Villarreal with a lot of match control and really quite impressive. Didn't convert their chances. As Diana Christine said, Villarreal will pay for that and they paid for it. Should have put them away. Michael Carrick was coaching.
He looked great, by the way.
Yep, he did.
Very much at home.
He's a good-looking man. Van der Beek fielded instead of Bruno Fernandes. Yeah, Martial fielded instead of Marcus Rashford. Neither of which I had the biggest problem with, actually. Like,
no one I really did. didn't.
Well, like no. There were a lot of issues on social media about it.
Was there?
Yeah, because he'd, you know, created the most chances and all the rest of it. I was like, yeah, but he's not like in his rhythm. And when he came on, everyone was like, oh, he changed the game. I was like, well, yeah, but he was always going to do that. But like, if you want to start a game away from home and you want match control, you're better with Van der Beek because he gives you that tempo and regulation potentially, whereas Fernandes doesn't. And if you keep conceding possession at Villarreal, at home, if you're unlucky, they're gonna make you pay, and they should make them pay. So I wasn't wildly against the team. I liked the selection. United weren't that fluid as we expected, but ultimately they just have sufficient firepower. Cristiano Ronaldo with a very good finish. I mean, I must say, very good finish, although some of the fawning over this goal, oh my goodness, he knew the anticipation. I was like, it's just a very good finish. It's a very good lob. It's a very good finish.
Good goal.
You know. And I really like the construction of the second goal. Great link-up play, great movement. There was a decoy run by Ronaldo, Fernandes with a really nice touch wide, and Sancho just doing what Sancho does.
Fernandes didn't look too happy with it, though.
Well, I mean,
do you think I was a bit like, how dare you bench me? Look what
performative.
I bring. Look what I bring. Oh,
I care so much. I care so much. Okay, we get it. You care so much. It's fine. It's good. Like, it's come on. Okay, look. Come on. I mean.
You know what? Yeah, I get it. You're my favourite Manchester United fan. Just kidding. Carl Anker is.
He's my favourite United fan.
You're my second favourite United fan.
He's my favourite United fan.
You're both my joint favourite United fans.
Oh, make me emotional. But yeah, a very good win for United. Puts them in good stead. Puts them through. And
so far, top of the group.
Yeah. I mean, good for Carrick.
They will be top of the group, huh?
I suppose Carrick is auditioning at some point for his role under the new manager, whoever that is. And there's lots of talk. As you mentioned, there's lots of talk about Valverde, which I love because that was such a specific reference.
I love it too.
I love Valverde.
Yeah. And I think he'd do really well at Man United. I think he's a great appointment at the moment.
He's a good human.
He deserves more than an interim job. But I think he's a great interim.
He wrote it was so fun. I told he's like,
I saw that. Yeah, like,
Ernesto, just like stick with taking your photos. Like,
don't do it. I think he's great, man. I think he's great. Wonderful. I think he'd be a great appointment.
I love Valverde because he's
very classy.
There's such an essential decency about him.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, let's talk about his old club. Well, actually, no. Before we do, let's talk about the other game in that group, Young Boys. And Atalanta with an absolute thriller in Bern. Oh,
Atalanta,
my good grief.
Do you know what? They're absolutely box office. Someone said it best. So
Nikki Bandini. She tweeted. She said,
always watch Atalanta. And then someone replied, but just never bet on them.
That's the motto.
It's just, I love it. I love it.
Zapata opened the scoring, equalizer before halftime. Atalanta taking the lead 2-1.
Palomino, was it? Centre back.
Yeah. Got the second. Vincent Sierra got an equaliser for Young Boys, and then Sylvain Hefti with an absolute wonder goal, which should have won the game.
Yeah. But it's
goal like that deserves to win games. And then Luis Muriel was just like, I'm going to pop this little cheeky free kick over the wall.
Muriel's been on smoke. Muriel is like,
I love
just,
it. Man.
Just, do you know, I love these kind of like, do you know, he's weird. Do you know, it's weird. Like, you know, like you've got Batman and Robin. I think that actually Atlanta have got Robin and Robin because like Zapata and Muriel are not quite Batman. They don't have Batman energy and like, they're just going to pop up and do their thing. And just like, but I don't mean Robin as in a subsidiary. I mean, as in like,
just they're all sidekicks.
The underdog though, the underdog vibes.
Yeah.
Like they both really found themselves. Muriel had a good spell like elsewhere, I think Sevilla, but like they both really found themselves in terms of spiritual home at Atalanta. So yeah, they're very much the Robin Hood FC, aren't they, Atalanta?
Yeah, it does strike me as some you know, somewhere that you will be able to find a home.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Makes that final match though super interesting because Atalanta play Villarreal in essentially a shootout for who goes through.
It's funny because I thought these are the two most cohesive teams in the group, actually. In terms of the football they've played, they're the teams that had the most cohesion, but actually it's not always about cohesion. Yeah. Atlanta's firepower has kind of come to them a bit late and they've been a bit all over the place, frankly, this year.
I know a load of people are going to roll their eyes at me saying this, but for the way that Manchester United have played in this group, the fact that they are top, having only lost one game, is wild.
I mean, that group is a catfish.
That is, I think that's the most catfish group, actually.
It is. There's always one catfish group in the Champions League.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Group of death, group of catfish. That needs to be a thing. The next
group
World Cup.
Group of catfish, man.
Who are the group of catfish? But this is a group of catfish for sure.
Atalanta could end up going out of Europe entirely.
I saw a stat. Wolfsburg, in their group, cannot finish third. They can only finish first, second or fourth.
I know. I love it. Yeah. Love that. That's such a Wolfsburg thing.
Yeah. Can I? Oh my God. That's so funny. You said that. I was about to say this. If you said to me, which club is this in the Champions League? I'd be like Wolfsburg. It'd be like me.
Well, they faced Lille on the final match day, having lost to
Sevilla.
Oh dear, dear, dear. It's a bad week for German clubs in the Champions League. Apart from Bayern, who scraped through away at Kiev.
But Sevilla was such good value for that, to be honest.
They were.
It was such good value, yeah.
Lille beating Salzburg in the other game in that group, which was a little eye-raising result, that. That's eyebrow-raising, sorry.
No, the most eyebrow-raising part of this was the fact that, like, Jonathan David was begging Burak Yilmaz for the ball, for the winning goal. He was begging on these three occasions. And he was like, please, please, and eventually it ricocheted to him. It was like... It's the only way Yilmaz was going to pass it. And he got it. He was like, yeah, I'll take that. Bang, 1-0. But yeah, shout out to him. He's been, you know, really impressive again.
Such a good player, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Lille have only lost one game in that group. They're on 8 points. Salzburg on 7 points. Sevilla on 6. And Wolfsburg on 5. What else do we need to talk about? We need to talk about, we mentioned Bayern being Dynamo Kiev 2-1 in, or Dynamo Kiev.
Lewandowski is so good that his bicycle kick goes virtually unreported.
I know.
Like, it's, this goal was incredible. It was incredible. Like, and it was
both improv. Goals were real, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Coman's was a very fine strike, but the improv, although Neuer had a moment, didn't he? Neuer had, I think maybe it was cold. He had a bit of a...
Neuer's had a few this year.
He had a waft, yeah, yeah.
Neuer does this, basically. He's like... It's like a DJ who only plays underground music in like a really mainstream club. He'll play one tune that they all know. So everyone's on side being like, yeah. And then he'll play three or four in a row that they're all a bit like, I'm not sure about this, but he played that one a while ago.
Do you know, it's like when Mos Def released True Magic and you weren't sure if he actually wanted anyone to like that album. It feels like that for Neuer's like, I've been so dominant for so long. Let me just give everyone a curveball.
Well, there was that thing, wasn't there, where like he basically, for 2 or 3 years, he got away with definitely not being the best German keeper around.
Yes.
Because he was Manuel Neuer. And then he had that unbelievable year last year. And then he's decided to just, he's like, it doesn't matter. He's like, this year doesn't matter. Yeah. After the season I had last year and the season before, winning the Champions League.
I've gone clear again.
I'm going rogue for two seasons and no one's having a conversation.
Do you know what's actually an interesting thing to analyse? How the Champions League has punctuated the careers of those core Bayern players.
Mm.
You know, if you look at Müller in the ascendancy and then the Champions League almost capped one era of that, because it was like after World Cup, the Champions League, then World Cup. And then like, okay, that was like all sort of a footnote. And then they kind of had to return to that again. It's really interesting, actually.
Obviously, Bayern way out in front in this group. They're going to finish top. Oh, they host Barca on the final match day. With Barca needing something from it to go through.
I mean, it's such a strange one because, okay, how do I say this? It's not a good look for Barca to go through, I mean, financially. Financially, Barca really need this.
Yeah, they really do.
The problem is, it's a strange one. I think actually, in the end, you always go for the victory. There's no question about that. And Barca have to go for it. The sad thing for Barca is 0-0 draw against Benfica. They played some beautiful football, but they just lack the finishing touch. They lack the striker. Maybe it's not the striker. Maybe it's the finishing, actually, because they do have forwards that can finish. But it's so frustrating for them because they basically are missing. I mean, the absence of Ansu Fati is cruel at this point. Like, I mean, it's cruel.
So just we didn't mention Bayern's absences due to COVID and...
Oh, that's wild. Oh, my goodness.
Slight reluctance to get vaccinated, but a load of them are getting vaccinated now.
It looks like Bayern are deciding to basically fine unvaccinated players for every sort of week they miss of quarantine. So Bayern have their issues off the field. But Barcelona, the sadness there is I worry they're going to come up slightly short in the Champions League. But I don't think it's impossible that they win at Bayern because Bayern might be a bit distracted by other considerations. And also, if you really go at Bayern, Gladbach have shown you can get some joy.
Also, Bayern have had a few ropey results recently.
Yeah, they provided a bit of a playbook, Gladbach in particular, for how to go at this team. And they lack a bit of cohesion in the back four. Some uncertain characters and combinations there. The worst thing with Barca is whenever I start believing they can do something, they let me down, and it's normally the finishing. Right, it's normally the finishing. I think it'll be that again. The other day against Benfica, when Dembele came on, and this is the funny thing with Dembele coming on, right? I think we said this before. Those three huge signings they made after Neymar's departure, the one signing that really has only failed through no pure fault of his own. Fault is a harsh word because Coutinho was just never a good fit to start with. But Dembele's injuries, because Dembele was scoring big goals. I mean, Atleti, he got a huge goal against them in La Liga. You know, he was scoring big goals almost from his arrival, and his injuries just hurt him. And when he came on, the roar from the Camp Nou, this is a beloved footballer. And it doesn't hurt to have the Xavi co-sign straight in the gate. No. Because this is a man playing like the new coach has belief. What's that word he used? He said he was a crack, a brilliant player, like an elite footballer. Dembele came on and was basically, again, shout out to Diana Christine. She pointed this out. She said, you know, they were having a nice quiet evening with Demir out on the flank. Demir was playing well, don't get me wrong, but was causing problems, but were manager problems. Dembele came on and it got very real. I mean, there was so much.
Can we talk about Demir, though? Because they got out, they absolutely got away with it right at the end. Haris Seferovic.
It's rare that you see a striker go through a confidence crisis in real time. But when he knocked it past Ter Stegen and then faced with the goal, it was strange because the first touch, it was almost like, do I go past him with the first touch or finish first time? Last minute, you see the decision being made. You know, I'll go past him. Actually, it was a very good touch to go past Ter Stegen. And then scuffed finish. And someone, Tori Haugstad, shared a graphic of Zahirovic's last few seasons.
And
he
literally,
he basically goes like 5 goals in 30 games, 23 and 29, 5 and 30, 20 something in 30. Like, he really is a player demonstrably who operates on the basis of confidence. And the really sad thing for him is, unfortunately, is that there's certain moments where a goal changes your career. It happened with Espanyol, actually, Barca Espanyol, Xavi's first game, where I can't remember the striker, but he missed a superb chance, right? I think it was, he missed a superb chance at 1-0. And if that goes in, he is forever the player that scores the equaliser against Xavi's Barcelona at the Camp Nou. And that affects your contract renegotiations, affects everything. And that is definitely a sliding doors moment. And Seferovic had that. You know what I mean? And I say this out of sympathy because every now and again in a striker's career, you see a moment where the entire career changes. And that was that for him, you know?
So Barcelona need to, they don't even need to channel their inner Gladbach when they go to, I never thought I'd say this, but Barcelona just need to beat Augsburg.
They do, you know, they do.
They don't even need to be Gladbach, they just need to be Augsburg.
You're right. And they've got the tools to be Augsburg because the way that they kept some of Busquets' play, there's a pass that Busquets plays in the first half, I think. Ryan, honestly, so he looks up and Busquets obviously two-footed over distance. He looks up and you think he's about to sweep this long diagonal pass to the left flank, right? And I'm literally like, okay, wow, there it is. What a great pass. And he plays this astonishing reverse pass with the head fake into the inside right channel. And I'm just like, I honestly think the Busquets head fake is the most consistently mind-blowing skill that I see in football.
Yeah, it's
because
good,
he does it all the time with no flash, and he always does it when it's necessary. And I've never seen a player this, you know, he's relatively slow, cover this much ground, like dominate this much ground. He was brilliant against Benfica again. And, you know, it's no coincidence that if you combine him with a coach that really understands him, Luis Enrique for Spain, Xavi for Barca, he is, on a day like that, in that specific role, he's the best defensive midfielder in the world. Even now, even physically in decline, even now, he's still the best in the world.
What a shout.
There we go. There's my cold take.
Well, it is chilly out, and I think it would be lovely and kind of you to depart with such a warming gesture.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
That take. Warm your hands on that take, everyone.
Yeah, there you go.
So, 11 teams through, 5 to be decided on the final match day. Sporting, Manchester City, Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, Inter, Juve, PSG, Real Madrid, Ajax, Bayern. Good list.
Really good.
Shall we get out of here?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
We hope everyone's staying safe and well. To anyone celebrating Thanksgiving, hope you have a great day. Filled with good company and good food and plenty of love.
Love. Hit high note. There you go.
Everyone's just like, oh God. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, guys. We're playing out this episode on Vincent, the New Age. Don't forget to check the Stadio Outros playlist on Spotify. Check theringer.com/soccer. Stadio newsletter. Go to stadio.football to sign up. And all of the other admin that we did at the top of the show. Anything else you want to add, Mr. Gwanga?
Nothing further, Johanna.
Lovely. Have a lovely rest of the week and weekend, everyone. Much love, and we'll be back on Monday.
See you then.